This morning, America's first news starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The end of the Korean War. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Friday, April 27. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is meeting today with South Korean President Moon Jae-in. We'll take you to the Korean Peninsula in just a moment.
Entertainer Bill Cosby has been found guilty on all three counts in his sexual assault retrial. Hear how much prison time he faces.
As soon as Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was confirmed, he was on a plane to Europe for a NATO meeting in Brussels.
And the spotlight may be off Ronnie Jackson, since he's withdrawn from consideration as VA secretary, but the spotlight is on how he has sometimes distributed sleeping pills.
It seems much more pervasive than we would have expected. There are reports that, you know, this is fairly common practice in the military, State Department folks, and even members of Congress that we spoke with didn't really seem that concerned about the practice, kind of having some understanding that it was something kind of common.
Sarah Carlin Smith at Politico on life in Washington with the help of sleeping pills and stimulants, especially for overseas trips. History today on the Korean Peninsula. Kim Jong-un became the first North Korean leader to set foot in the South since the Korean War when he stepped across the military demarcation line earlier today and shook hands with South Korean President Moon Jae-in. The Wall Street Journal says the two Korean leaders were due to discuss improvements in relations and, perhaps most critically, North Korea's nuclear arsenal. Meanwhile, moments ago, they released a joint statement announcing there will be no more war on the Korean Peninsula. Separately, the Trump administration has insisted that it must see substantial progress on dialing back the North's nuclear program before making concessions, including the loosening of sanctions. Mr. Trump was on Fox News yesterday discussing his potential summit with Mr. Kim.
So it could be that I walk out quickly, with respect, but it could be. It could be that maybe the meeting doesn't even take place. Who knows? But I can tell you right now, they want to meet.
Central questions in today's talks in the truce village of Panmunjom, which include a dinner banquet, are what North Korea might demand and what concessions the South might offer. Let's get more now from Jonathan Chang, Wall Street Journal bureau chief in Seoul, South Korea. We talked to him earlier today. He's been watching these events unfold. Jonathan, what's the scene?
Well, this is not the first time that two leaders of the Koreas have met, but the first time in more than a decade. And the first time with Kim Jong-un, and it's heavy on the symbolism, and it's been filled with a lot of unexpected moments, like where you have the two leaders sitting on a park bench just talking to one another, no aides around, no advisors, no one, just the two of them sitting there drinking water and talking about, nobody knows what they're talking about. I get some lip readers out here.
I was reading in your story how when they initially met and shook hands, you said that Mr. Kim kind of coaxed him across the line into North Korean territory for just a moment. Then they stepped back into South Korean territory. Was that significant?
Yeah, it was, in that, you know, the plan initially, as far as we know, was for them to meet right at the military demarcation line, that's the line, and for Kim to step on over, and that would be it. But what we've been told is that Moon, when he got there, made some remarks to Kim about, you know, when would he be able to come over to the North, and Kim just sort of said, "Let me step over now." And so the two of them stepped over. They were both standing in the North momentarily, and then they held hands and walked over the line together. So that was a scene from this morning, and obviously very rich with symbolism, great for the cameras.
Had Mr. Moon or any South Korean or not been in North Korean territory?
Well, the two previous summits between the two Koreas were both held in Pyongyang. So in both of those cases, the South Korean president was in Pyongyang itself.
Okay.
For Moon, actually, he has been north of the DMZ before to attend a family reunion in 2004. But, of course, this is a different circumstance altogether. He's shaking hands with the third generation leader of North Korea. They're doing it at Panmunjom, where the armistice was signed and the Korean War in 1953. They're holding hands. They step over the line together. I mean, this is sort of, you know, a symbolic, you know, coup.
Speaking of family reunions, what could this mean on the humanitarian front, say, with the reunification of some families who've been separated?
Yeah, that's right. After the first inter-Korean summit in 2000, they started to arrange these reunions. As I mentioned, Moon himself attended one in 2004 to meet his aunt, the sister of his mother, who was still in North Korea. Moon's parents were born in North Korea and were evacuated to the south during the Korean War, but the sister of the mother was left behind. Obviously, as time goes by, we're now, you know, roughly seven decades on from that time, and so many of these people who had brothers or sisters, either one side or the other, has died in many of these cases, but there are still tens of thousands of South Koreans who are registered with the government and who are queued up and ready to try and see whether their relatives in the North are still alive.
We're speaking with Jonathan Chang, Wall Street Journal bureau chief in Seoul, South Korea. Best and worst case scenarios here would be what?
Well, I mean, best case scenario, it depends how realistic you need me to be. But obviously, I think we can hope for a lowering of tensions. I think that's pretty much set. Some language on denuclearization and what Kim intends to do or not do with his nuclear arsenal. That's definitely something that would be great to have. Worst case scenario here is simply that there's nothing mentioned on the nuclear issue in the joint statement, and that possibly could lead Washington to be more suspect about the upcoming summit with Trump and Kim. They really do want to see some movement by the North, and they don't want it to be dragged out over the course of years as previous promises have been.
Thanks, Jonathan. Wall Street Journal bureau chief Jonathan Chang from Seoul, South Korea. By the way, the two leaders have released a joint statement that seems to be just full of news today. They have announced that the end of the Korean War will officially take place later this year. That's about 65 years after the end of hostilities. There will be family reunifications with a liaison office set up in North Korea. It's just remarkable stuff here. Denuclearization has been announced, although it's not clear with specifics yet on what exactly that will mean. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. New Secretary of State Mike Pompeo had barely been sworn into the new job before he was dispatched on his first trip overseas. He was approved by the Senate yesterday on a vote of 57-42. After being confirmed, Mr. Pompeo, the former CIA director, was quickly sworn in by Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito. He then headed for Andrews Air Force Base, where a plane was waiting to take him to Belgium for a NATO meeting in Brussels.
This mission matters an awful lot to the United States of America. The president very much wanted me to get here, and I'm glad we're able to make it, and I look forward to a productive visit here today.
The meeting is partly to lay the groundwork for July's NATO summit for heads of state and government, a group that will include President Trump. But it's also an opportunity for Mr. Pompeo to stress America's commitment to NATO, whose value Mr. Trump has questioned. Politico says he's likely to tackle questions about what Mr. Trump will do about the Iran deal, as well as how the U.S. intends to help its European allies confront threats from Russia. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Friday. Entertainer Bill Cosby has been found guilty of sexually assaulting a woman after drugging her at his suburban Philadelphia home in 2004. A jury in Norristown, Pennsylvania yesterday delivered the verdict for each of three counts of aggravated indecent assault. He could get as much as 10 years for each of the counts. Montgomery County District Attorney Kevin Steele.
What was revealed through this investigation was a man who had spent decades preying on women that he drugged and sexually assaulted, and a man who had evaded this moment here today for far too long.
In court, Mr. Steele asked to have Mr. Cosby's $1 million bail revoked, saying he owned a private plane. Mr. Cosby shouted back, quote, "He doesn't have a plane, you blankety blank." Defense attorney Thomas Mesereau said he was disappointed with the verdict and planned to appeal. That will come after the sentencing, which is expected in the next 3 months. Mr. Cosby's first trial in June ended in a hung jury and a mistrial. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the two Koreas today agreed to rid their peninsula of nuclear weapons, but failed to provide any new specific measures how to achieve that. A joint statement issued after their leaders' talks today says the two Koreas confirmed their goal of achieving a nuclear-free Korean peninsula through complete denuclearization. They agreed to high-level military talks next month to reduce animosity and now say there will be no war. The Korean leaders also agreed to hold reunions of war-separated families and set up a liaison office in a border city. Barely 12 hours after being sworn in, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo went straight to NATO headquarters in Brussels in what European allies saw as strong support for an institution that President Trump once called obsolete.
I did come straight away. I was sworn in yesterday afternoon, hopped on a plane, and came straight here. There's good reason for that. The work that's being done here today is invaluable.
As NATO foreign ministers gathered in Brussels, Pompeo called NATO invaluable, a sharp contrast to Trump's earlier rebuke of the alliance. Arizona and Colorado teachers plan to descend upon their respective capitals for a second day in a growing educator uprising. Educators in both states want more classroom resources and have received offers either for increased school funding or pay, but they say the money isn't guaranteed and the efforts don't go far enough. The walkouts are the latest in demonstrations that spread from West Virginia, Oklahoma, and Kentucky. The family of Swedish DJ Avicii, who was found dead last week in Oman at the age of 28, says he struggled with life and could not go on any longer. The statement appears to suggest that the electronic dance musician and producer took his own life. Avicii, whose real name was Tim Bergling, known for international hits such as Wake Me Up, was found dead last Friday, but no cause of death was released. And the NFL draft, the number one pick, went to the Cleveland Browns, and they took Baker Mayfield, the Heisman-winning quarterback from Oklahoma, somewhat of a controversial pick. With a second pick, the Giants took Penn State running back Saquon Barkley. The Jets selected USC quarterback Sam Darnold third.
It already looks like it's the Jets and Browns now for the AFC Championship game.
You think so?
Yeah, with the Giants waiting in the wings after conquering the NFC. What do you think?
We shall see, yes.
23 minutes after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News.
Look into any great business. Whether it's a manufacturer or a hotel, a store, school, or hospital. Look into each and every one of them and you'll find the same thing. Great people. At Kronos, we believe that great businesses are powered by great people. And with Kronos Workforce Solutions, we'll help you find them, keep them, and engage them. Learn more at Kronos.com. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
Thanks for being with us. More than 6 in 10 homeowners do not ever plan to move. According to a new report from Bankrate.com, the remainder anticipates staying in their current home for a median of 5 years. What do these numbers mean for the economy? We're joined now by Mark Hamrick, Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate. Mark, what'd you look at?
We wanted to basically get at least one kind of a slice of the state of home ownership in the United States right now with so much going on with the housing market. And so we asked homeowners whether they plan to move, and if so, when. Well, we found some pretty surprising findings. 62% don't ever plan to move. Now, of course, that's their current plan. That may change. 79% plan to stay put for 5 years. And then you go on down the line, about a third of those homeowners responding said, well, you know, we do plan to remodel, upgrade, or add to the home in the next 5 years. And then just a small number, I would say 30% plan to live in their home for fewer than 5 years.
Okay.
So, you know, this is all feeding into what's going on in the housing market now, Gord, where we don't have a lot of homes on the market.
How do those numbers compare historically?
We think that they are probably more sedentary than in the past. We don't have our own survey history to compare it with. But here's how I explain it, a couple of things. And first of all, we begin with young people, particularly those who either are not working or are working and have been saddled with some of the $1.4 trillion in student loan debt. We know that that is delaying and deferring things like home ownership. Then with older people, people my age and older, you know, there's a lot of cases going on where either people have seen this escalation in home prices over the past number of years and are saying, you know what, our place is just fine given what we'll have to pay to get into the next place. And that could even pertain to downsizing because to to downsize can cost a lot of money, too. And so, we're talking earlier about housing affordability. We have this double-edged sword now of rising mortgage rates, highest in 4 years, and rising home prices, where we're basically seeing year-over-year increases just on average of 5 to 10% across the country. And this is piling up on what's been happening in recent years. So, it's an interesting time to be watching what's going on with home sales, home prices, and we've had a lot of looks at that data in the last few days.
So broadly speaking, what does some of these numbers mean? For housing and the economy in general, if 62% don't plan to move at all?
Well, you know, it's good for those that are in the renovation business, for contractors that can do that renovation or home improvement piece. Obviously, the likes of Lowe's, Home Depot, your local hardware store, it helps them.
Thanks, Mark. Mark Hamrick, Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
If you run a small business, you know there's nothing small about it. Dell's Small Business Technology Advisors are here to help with solutions tailored to your business. And for a limited time, get up to 35% off select PCs with Intel Core processors, plus free shipping on everything. Talk to a Dell Small Business Advisor today at 877-BUY-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. ThisMorning@CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Friday, April 27. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. The leaders of the two Koreas agree to formally end the Korean War and to denuclearize the peninsula. Actor and comedian Bill Cosby found guilty of sexual assault. Amazon is raising the price of its Prime membership to $119 a year. At least 10 people injured, thousands evacuated after a refinery explosion in Superior, Wisconsin. Cleveland Browns took Oklahoma QB Baker Mayfield as the first overall pick in the NFL draft. And what the University of Utah has installed for students a little weepy about their final exams. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Ronny Jackson, the White House physician who has now withdrawn his name from consideration as Secretary of Veterans Affairs, regularly handed out the sleep drug Ambien and the alertness drug Provigil to West Wing officials traveling on overseas flights. His nomination has inadvertently exposed the widespread use of sleep and alertness drugs among government officials, from the White House and State Department to the Pentagon and Congress itself. More from Sarah Carlin Smith, healthcare reporter at Politico. Sarah, what have you found?
Yeah, so what my colleagues and I have discovered over the past couple of days is that, you know, perhaps Jackson's behavior wasn't as unusual as you might think, or at least that it's fairly common in military circles, State Department, maybe high-level White House officials, or even members of Congress, people that do a lot of travel all over the globe for work, perhaps fairly frequently, to use, in particular, sleeping pills or maybe pills that kind of help you get awake after long travel, to kind of compensate for their hectic work schedule. So it seems like a much more kind of widespread, perhaps, problem of, you know, people really turning to drugs because of their work schedules and work responsibilities.
Yeah. And so you focused on two in the story, Ambien and Provigil. Explain what each does.
So Ambien is a medicine to help people go to sleep. It's usually used to treat insomnia, but it can also be used to treat what they call like shift worker disorder, I guess, or to treat people that do kind of work strange shifts. Provigil is usually used to treat narcolepsy, a condition where you would have trouble staying awake. So it kind of helps awaken you, and almost like caffeine or coffee would, although people say it doesn't have kind of the same side effects that coffee would have.
Okay. And are both prescription?
Correct. They're both prescription substances. They're both also considered controlled substances by the DEA. And they do both have some potential for, you know, addiction and abuse and misuse.
Mm. So part of the issue here is that Mr. Jackson was nicknamed the Candy Man by some because he handed these things out and without a prescription, right? Or the accusation is that sometimes he may not have done a full workup on somebody before giving them out?
Right. So the details are not perfectly clear, but it appears that he, from what people are saying, he was giving out pills essentially at times to kind of anybody who wanted them on the airplane. And so he likely wasn't doing it with a particular prescription or knowing, you know, the medical history of the folks he was providing the pills to, and, you know, not really having the doctor-patient relationship that is supposed to happen before somebody provides a prescription medicine. That's why they're a prescription medicine, not something you can just walk into your local pharmacy or drugstore down the street and buy yourself.
Mm. We're speaking with Sarah Carlin Smith, healthcare reporter at Politico. She's written a piece entitled Jackson Troubles Shine Lights on a Fact of Washington Life. And she's talking about sleeping pills and, of course, something like Provigil. How pervasive is this, by the way? Did you get any feel for that?
It seems much more pervasive than we would have expected. Like I said, there are reports that, you know, this is fairly common practice in the military, particularly among pilots, State Department folks, you know, diplomats who do a lot of international travel as well. And even members of Congress that we spoke with didn't really seem that concerned about the practice, kind of having some understanding that it was something kind of common that they maybe even talked to. And even some of the medical professionals I talked to yesterday said, anecdotally, they know it's actually very common for doctors to do this among themselves, to self-medicate have long periods of travel.
Thanks, Sarah. Sarah Carlin Smith, healthcare reporter at Politico. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, it's officially 5K season, but if running 3.1 miles seems like a goal too difficult to achieve, you're in luck. There's a road race in Texas designed specifically for underachievers. The Bernie .5K, named after its host city near San Antonio, will take place on May 5th. Race entry costs $25, but it's for a good cause. The event is raising funds for Blessings in a Backpack, which provides food for underprivileged children. There's also a VIP option for big shots not wishing to expend any energy. A 1963 Volkswagen bus will transport them the length of the course for an extra $25.
Wait, the whole length of the course?
The whole length of the course, Gordon.
Wow.
This could take seconds.
All 400, 500 yards or whatever that is?
Exactly. Uh-huh. The organizers have promised runners will receive a free pint of beer at the start of the race and will be given a pretentious car window sticker upon completion of the run. In case the metric conversion is too tough to handle, 0.5K is only a little over a quarter of a mile one time around the high school track, and there's reportedly a coffee and donut break in the middle.
That's great.
So does this sound like your kind of race? Well, unfortunately, you're too late. The organizer's permit only allowed for 100 fellow underachievers to race, and registration is already filled up.
Very good.
See, yeah, see like that? I promoted
done.
It. I got everybody excited about it,
yep.
And then squashed their dreams.
Then you shut it down. So don't bother going to Google Flights flights from where you are to, was it Bernie?
Right.
Bern, Texas?
But I have a feeling, Bernie, but I have a feeling that this being so popular, I think it might spur some copycats around the country. So perhaps an underachiever race will be coming to a town near you.
And taking a little page out of the Apple playbook by limiting.
Yes.
Right? Limiting the amount of spots available.
Right,
sort of like restricting product on store shelves.
They're going to have a lot of spectators, I bet, for
this. That's good. Very good.
And the morning after the NFL draft's first round, people are full of hot takes, you know that, Gordon, about which teams were the winners and which were the losers. But if we've learned anything over the years, it should be that we have no idea who is going to be a star and who's going to be a bust. Case in point, J.J. Watt. Before the draft started last night, Watt shared some screen grabs on Twitter of the reaction of Houston Texans fans after he was drafted in 2011. And let's just say he did not get a warm reception online or in person, where he was actually booed at the draft. The good news is, maybe the frosty reception by Texans fans wasn't such a bad thing after all. As Watt has said, it has motivated him since. He saved the video of fans booing him on his phone and his computer, and has said that his goal was to change the city's mind about him, which he did, in becoming a beloved player for both his on- and off-the-field achievements.
Very good.
I like that.
Very good.
Taking
Nicely
that negative
done.
And spinning it into a positive.
He certainly has done that.
Yes.
How do you feel, by the way? about Saquon Barkley in the backfield of your New York Giants.
You and I had talked about this several times before the draft, off air.
Yeah.
I went back and forth a couple different times on this about wanting a quarterback or maybe wanting a running back. I'm very happy with the Saquon Barkley pick because I haven't heard great things about these quarterbacks, like that they're just going to all be Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
So I feel like Saquon was the safe pick.
Mike and I swapped texts last night while the draft was going on, and we agreed this was the first time in I don't know how long that it appears both Jets and Giants fans were pleased with their picks.
Yes. Jets and Giants fans have never been this happy at the same time in the history of the NFL.
Right.
Sam Darnold, I think just about every Jets fan happy about that he fell to number three for them.
Yeah, and how about that? One thing the Jets and Giants fans were also unified about?
Yeah.
Booing Roger Goodell.
Yeah, of course.
That was unbelievable.
That goes for all fans across the country, let's face facts.
Even at the start of things,
yeah,
when Roger Staubach, Jason Witten, and Troy Aikman were on the stage with him, he was getting booed.
He made
a funny comment, by the way. He's like, you're booing these guys?
Who he brought up there specifically so he could probably try and deflect some boos, and it didn't even work.
Thank you, Mike. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 most improved state for business, Michigan. Contact MichiganBusiness.org today. You want to raise the next time a recession happens? Get a job with Uncle Sam. MarketWatch says a new study finds that people who take a job with the government during a recession tend to see more long-term wage growth compared to those who take a job with the government when the economy is expanding. The study is from Duke University researchers. It says when the unemployment rate increases one percentage point, new college grads and other employees working for the government see long-term wage growth of 1% compared to those who work during a boom. Long-term wage growth refers to how much an employee's salary increases over time. In this case, that growth takes 3 to 4 years, but continues for 10 years thereafter. For the private sector during a recession, the study found that for every 1 percentage point increase in the unemployment rate, average wages dropped 1.5% initially, then recovered. Wages stabilized after 10 years. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the leaders of North and South Korea have agreed to work to rid the peninsula of nuclear weapons after holding an historic summit. The announcement was made by the North's Kim Jong-un and Moon Jae-in of South Korea after talks at the border. The two also agreed to push towards turning the armistice that ended the Korean War in 1953 into a peace treaty this year. The Korean leaders also agreed to hold reunions of war-separated families and set up a liaison office in a border city. This all comes just months after warlike rhetoric from North Korea. After decades of whispers, lawsuits, investigations, and close calls, Bill Cosby could be headed to prison at age 80 for sexual assault for the rest of his life, vindicating a multitude of women who doubted anyone would ever believe their word against that of America's dad. The comedian was convicted yesterday of drugging and molesting Temple University employee Andrea Konstad at his suburban Philadelphia mansion in 2004. Lily Bernard is one of the dozens of women who also accused Cosby.
It is also a victory for womanhood, and it is a victory for all sexual assault survivors.
Women's advocates called the verdict a turning point in the Me Too movement that proved what Cosby's accusers had been saying all along: his nice guy image was a sham. President Trump says personal attorney Michael Cohen handles very little of his legal work, but did represent him in the crazy Stormy Daniels deal, a rare presidential public reference to the porn actress who claimed she had sex with the president in 2006. Prosecutors in New York quickly claimed Trump's comments yesterday morning buttressed their arguments that not much of the material that the FBI seized from Cohen's home office and hotel should be protected by attorney-client privilege. Within 2 hours of Trump's interview, prosecutors submitted papers in court citing Trump's comments. Talk about putting on the miles. Hilton, a 1,300-pound white shark with nearly 20,000 followers on Twitter, was sighted near the Florida Panhandle this week in the Gulf of Mexico. The shark, who was tagged by a shark research organization last spring, has swum almost 10,000 miles in the past 14 months, all the way from Nova Scotia to the Gulf.
Getting ready for the Olympics, shark doing
a big guy.
Some training.
Stay clear when you go to South Carolina.
By the way, Hilton the shark has more Twitter followers than you and I combined.
What's that say?
I don't know what that says. I don't think I want to know. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. So, University of Utah students on the brink of tears during final exams have a space to let it all out. USA Today says the university's library has installed a cry closet, now available for stressed-out students. The rules: you got to knock before entering, only one person inside at a time. Limit your visit to 10 minutes. Turn the lights out when you leave. The closet, a freestanding woodshop project from three students, was installed Sunday. It's lined with a black interior. Plush stuffed animals are inside. Photos of it went viral this week to praise and criticism, of course. At least one person questioned if the closet was soundproof. A few people said there should be more of these around campus. The closet was approved by the school, which says it was an attempt at humor, but also a work of art meant to provoke feeling, thought, and conversation. The closet will remain in the library for our future leaders until the end of final exams on May 2nd. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.